Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB digital radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.
The Prime Minister Liz Truss has defended a giant package of unfunded tax cuts, which triggered a collapse in the value of the pound and a surge in borrowing costs. Now, Truss has been speaking to BBC local radio stations this morning. She has told them that her economic policy is the right plan for the UK, that growth won't come through overnight, but that the government's energy package will reduce inflation. Well, less than a month into galvaning, there has been this crisis of confidence, concern from the Americans, the IMF warning about rethinking the tax cuts. Joining us now is a triumvirate of Bloomberg's best, our head of economics, Stephanie Flanders, our Bank of England reporter, Philip Aldrich, and our markets reporter, Valerie Tytel, really to lead us through what's been happening. Extraordinary days in markets and in politics. Stephanie, I'd love to start with you. Liz Truss has finally emerged to defend last Friday's budget. She says that her policies are right. Are they?
Well, it's what was extraordinary about her interviews is that she has is not only sort of refusing to change path, which is not very surprising because it would be an incredible humiliation for her to have any kind of reversal. It's the unwillingness to accept that there was anything in last week's plan that has caused the mayhem in gilt markets and the fall in the pound in the last few days. And you also heard that from the chief secretary who was on the Today programme. I think, you know, that's going to be a bit of a red rag, I think, to investors and financial markets. It's one thing to say we're sticking to the course. It's quite another to appear to be in denial. She kept talking about the concrete action being required to bring down inflation, to help households, and that was why they had to act quickly. Well, of course, that was the reason to act with the energy package and the financial markets, despite that potentially having an enormous price tag attached to it, were quite willing to swallow that along with, you know, many other difficult decisions that governments are taking around the world. It really was last week's plan, what the ministers seem to be happy to say was a half-baked plan, because a lot of it's still to come, that has set this off. And I think the first step to getting any kind of credibility or putting a floor under UK assets will be just to accept that that was the cause and then make your argument that the markets are interpreting it incorrectly.
Valerie, how would you characterise the market reaction that we've seen? Huge drop in yields yesterday after the intervention by the Bank of England, slight rebound that we're seeing today.
Yeah, so the intervention announced was really to cause calm to one specific sector of the markets, that was long-end gilts. Now, who holds long-end gilts? UK pensions. I was actually looking at the numbers. Do you know that UK pensions, their assets under management, are nearly 100% of the UK's GDP? So they're huge. They're huge, especially in the long end. And they're also highly levered. So we had an asset, which normally doesn't wing around this much. I think historical vol is near 5 to 8 basis points a day. All of a sudden start moving 40, 45, 50 basis points. These pension funds came in and their risk models were telling them to de-risk. And when essentially the largest and maybe the only long-end structural holders of gilts is de-risking, that can cause huge ramifications, not just to gilts, but to the U.S. Treasury market and to European sovereign bonds. So, you know, they announced this big program in order to try to stem the volatility. They don't want to necessarily reverse what has happened. They just want markets to be able to take a big breather, reverse some of the volatility, and prevent this de-risking from spreading to their assets.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of a strange world where we're basically in QT and QE at the same time. We're sort of tightening and expanding from the Bank of England. But Philip, let me bring you in now to the conversation. You've got a fantastic piece on the terminal this morning talking about how actually the UK crisis has been many years in the making. Why?
It comes back to the point about government credibility and this point that the markets just do not believe at the moment that there is fiscal discipline. You know, as Stephanie was saying, if they had actually just come out with the energy plan at the mini budget and none of the other stuff, they probably would be being celebrated at the moment. You know, they're helping to bring down inflation mechanically and looking after household incomes. But they came out with all this other stuff, all these other tax cuts. So you know, £45 billion worth of tax cuts, and they just expected the markets to just take them on their word because of the Conservative Party's record for sound money, because of their, you know, because of the fact that the UK has never defaulted, you know, officially. They just believed that that there would be faith and trust. And what's happened since, really, you could probably date it back to the Scottish referendum, when there was this casual approach in politics towards, you know, what was, would have been a sort of existential decision. Until the last few weeks, no one seemed to really realise what we'd got ourselves into. Then you had the Brexit referendum, where, you know, people started playing fast and loose with the truth of some of the claims. And then following that, just kind of just this endless political mayhem. And then, you know, it all escalated a bit under Boris Johnson, when the judiciary were brought under it was just political attacks on the judiciary, and our institutions then started to be attacked. And we got that in the leadership campaign most of all, where Liz Truss, there's these, you know, nobody wants to listen to experts, the central bank needs to have its mandate changed, the fiscal watchdog needs to be sidelined, you know, and we want to break up the Treasury orthodoxy, calling it the blob. And, you know, the markets have just kind of said, how can we trust a government that doesn't even have faith in its own institutions, and has now just said to us, we don't really care about allowing this amount of borrowing.
Stephanie, we heard yesterday from the Institute of Directors that, you know, the Institute, the missing OBR forecasts was what led to this catastrophe. How important is the Office of Budget Responsibility in all of this? And can those forecasts help to resolve this crisis if it gives us a perspective on what's going to happen to government finances?
I think it can make the numbers add up. It can't make them any more palatable, I think, because what we're going to be looking at in November, when they are finally allowed to do the numbers, would be higher inflation down the track, much lower in the very short term because of the energy freeze, but higher inflation, both due to the extra spending in the budget, but also the fall in the pound. You're looking at a significant increase in government's debt servicing costs, probably an extra, just from the change in the last 6 months, let alone the last few days, is an extra sort of 15 billion or so a year on debt servicing. And if the government's going to stick to what the Chancellor has repeatedly said this week, that those numbers will have debt relative to the size of the economy going on a downward path, which is part of their fiscal rules. We reckon, on Bloomberg Economics, our UK economists reckon that will need in the range of 40 to 50 billion pounds a year of additional spending cuts if you're not doing anything else on tax. So yes, they might. Best case, it shows that they have done their arithmetic finally, but they also show that this government is facing a very tough struggle.
So, Valerie, I mean, I can see you poised. What does that mean for markets? Can they absorb that?
Look, I think that the important thing about the missing OBR forecasts is that the UK's Debt Management Office, the DMO, uses these forecasts to release their gilt remit, which is essentially, hey, market, this is how much I intend to borrow. These are the syndications I intend to hold. This is my auction schedule. So without these OBR forecasts, given the extent to what they announced, the market... There's a huge question mark over how much funding the UK government is going to need to tap. And if you view this as an international investor, we're in a new environment where we no longer have low inflation. Inflation has come back. It's roaring. It's double digits. We're no longer in this era of QE infinity where government's always there buying bonds. Like, you have to look at the UK as almost a business proposal. And if there is so much confusion over how much you're going to need to borrow to not only just fund this winter's energy crisis, but what about next year? What about the year after that? You know, if this calamity of what's going on in Russia doesn't end, there's too many question marks. And to a foreign investor, they're pulling back and they're saying, I'm not going to fund this deficit you plan on running. It doesn't look attractive. So cable's going to fall, yields are gonna shoot higher until we reach that equilibrium point.
That's such a good point. I just want to say, I mean, the government is right that lots of other countries are facing this basic dilemma of how do you help households short term without making it even more difficult for the central bank to do its job and bring down inflation, and how do you live more fundamentally with a higher interest rate era because you run up loads of debt on very low interest rates. Everybody faces that. But in that sort of ugly contest, you don't want to look the least worried about it and the most ugly. And that's, I think, what happened last Friday.
Philip Aldrich, of course, you cover the Bank of England and fiscal policy for the UK. So what's your take then? What is the path for the Bank of England for credibility?
Well, I mean, so the government actually, there's a piece that we're sort of ignoring here because they do have these structural reforms, these supply side reforms. And so their growth agenda does two things. It will generate extra growth, and that by increasing the supply capacity of the economy, that actually helps the Bank of England bring down inflation. So that's one of their.
But there's a big debate about whether or not those strategies work. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's government after government promises supply side reforms, and you never really see an awful lot materialising. But you know that is key to their strategy. So the tax cuts are half of it. As Stephanie was saying, half this mini budget was never even properly announced. And over the next few weeks, we're going to see a lot of supply side reform detail coming out, which they hope is going to reassure the markets because it does have this potentially this capacity effect, which brings down the inflation and eases the pressure on the Bank of England over the medium term. That's their thinking. And at the same time, to ensure fiscal discipline, or you know, to try and recover their credibility on fiscal discipline, there clearly is going to be stuff on spending. There's been talk about efficiencies. Departments are being told to find further savings. There are low hanging fruit. 250,000 jobs were added to the public sector workforce during the pandemic, and we have a shortage of workers in the private sector, and there may be a rebalancing there. So there are actions that can be taken to ease this, and the government is aware of these things. But obviously, at the moment, it hasn't set anything out. So how can anyone trust anything it says?
Valerie, you wanted to come in on that point about what the Bank of England is doing.
Yeah. I fear that, you know, after this reaction we've had to these supply side tax cuts, that they're going to get a bad rap. The history lets us focus on 1981, what Reagan did in the U.S. He released a series of budget measures, one of them being huge tax cuts, a big reorientation of the U.S. economy towards a market-friendly supply-side economics. And he was warned then, this is a gamble, right? But time was on his side. He had perfect timing. The Volcker shock, the inflation shock of the 70s was over. They were cutting rates. The U.S. at that time was running a current account surplus. It's hard to imagine.
But I'm sure
he was given he injected this into an economy so many different things I can talk about. The dollar reserve system was just picking up storm. People demanded treasuries, right? Now, all of these things that led that to be a success is not what Liz's trust's government is sitting on. They're sitting on current account deficits, right?
Well, this is it. And I want to, I'm sure Stephanie Flanders will have a view on this. With a foot in both camps in the US and the UK often, Stephanie, you know, this is the comparison that I'm sure that the Conservative Party would like to think about, Reaganomics and Liz Truss and the Thatcher comparisons, etc. But we're in a very different spot.
Yes, and I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think probably some of the most, you know, what's remembered about the Reagan years is actually the deficits more than anything else. And it was this ballooning of both the trade and the budget deficit in those years, but also really striking, really difficult reforms, controversial reforms about the, you know, the airline, deliberalization of the airlines had enormous impacts and caused a lot of disruption. You know, that sort of speaks to those kind of the reforms that they're talking about. If they're going to genuinely do something different to growth that hasn't been achieved by, as Phil says, all these other governments talking about supply side reforms, it actually means getting rid of the dead wood in UK industry. If you take it seriously, you would have, you know, if there are a lot of the economists who work with Liz Truss would say there's, and actually Alistair Heath has written a piece today in Rival publication about, you know, giving out a sort of intellectual version of what's underpinning that plan. And it is that we've been living on borrowed time with all this cheap money. Now around the world, businesses and governments will have to really show what they're made of, because they can't just get by on sort of free money. And in that environment, you could have a lot of not very productive, not very successful UK businesses be put out of business in the interest of becoming a more dynamic and productive economy. And I think that there's a sort of challenge there, clearly, politically. If you're going to have to cut spending and be unpopular on that front, and also potentially win a lot of enemies in the industrial sector and in the world of business in order to achieve your growth plan. Well, how credible is it really?
Well, I mean, from that position, Stephanie, the Tory MPs aren't going to be happy with a lot of that movement as well, because it's going politically will play very badly in some parts of the country. Is there any way in which that plan can be implemented in a politically palatable way?
Well, I'm sure that will they would be thinking about. I mean, clearly they will be looking for things that are crowd pleasers. They were looking for ways, you know, some of the reforms to planning, which will make it easier for people to build houses, will not be popular with the people living next door, but certainly could be popular with people who it'll make more affordable homes. You know, they will be looking for constituencies who can be won over to different bits of this agenda. But I mean, going back to where we started, the basic point is you can't do any of this if you don't have some form of stability and some sort of confidence in the macroeconomic structure, and that we don't have that at the moment, and that's going to stop businesses investing in this wonderful sunny upland vision.
I just want to sort of come to a final thought, if I can. In the next few days, the next couple of weeks, really, what should investors, what should we be thinking about then in terms of what is happening with markets and with government? Valerie, you know, sterling continues to drop. We're watching gilt yields closely. What's the most important thing to think about if you're trading or thinking about your investments now?
Look, it's going to take some time for the market to digest what's happened, right? So there is still stuff to be shook out of this market. I highly doubt, given what we've heard from Truss today, there is going to be no U-turn. So that tells me yields are going to go higher. Sterling is going to go weaker. We need to find this level where foreign investment is going to come back to the UK. And I don't think it's here. You know, we had the Barclays strategist on earlier saying that if the Bank of England doesn't get aggressive, then the pound is going to go to parity. So we have some more Bank of England speakers later today. Hugh Pill later this afternoon. The markets will be watching every word they say very closely.
Yeah, Phil, your view.
The key thing to watch out for is the announcements on the other side of the ledger, the sort of savings that they're going to find. That's how they're going to restore fiscal credibility, which could then provide some bedrock to build things on.
Stephanie, we heard from Liz Truss this morning that she's sticking to her policies, but not very much more. Look into your crystal ball for us. How do you think the government can move on from this?
Well, I think, as Phil said, you have to start getting a bit more detail of how things are going to be paid for. They probably have to confirm or not whether they're going to raise benefits in line with inflation, as the previous government had been committed to. That would be enormously controversial if so. But the main thing, just to go back to what I started with, they have to own it. They have to explain why the markets are not looking at the full package properly. I think to be in denial, to not even admit that most of this volatility is down to their plan, which is the chief secretary this morning would not own the fact that this was caused by their plan. I think if they don't get beyond that, then things are going to continue to get worse.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg Radio.